everybody. The John and Jake Show. A little bit of newstainment. Andrew, I believe they refer to it as?
Newstainment.
That's right. That's what I meant right there. You write to us at mynorthwest.com. Or do you like to say?
I suppose you can use it.
All right. I'm Marcos to Casino Resort. Text line at 1-888. Thank you, Aaron. 973-5476. Dab it in it. She was supposed to be Donald Trump's running mate. She was way high on the list from South Dakota, state that did its best to try to stop all that COVID lockdown crap. And she was the groomer. They're going to groom her. Trump's really thinking about getting her in there, get South Dakota, because, boy, once you get South Dakota,
yeah, then you've just got it.
Sweeping the boards. So there's an autobiography. I assume she had somebody help her write it. And somewhere in there, at the last part of the book, she's talking about how the fact that, you know, the Biden's dog biting everybody, maybe that dog, whatever the dog's name is, General or whatever.
Commander
could have gone the same way as Cricket. Well, Cricket, she talked about earlier, was a dog that was 14 months old. It was a hunting dog that apparently she was unable to train the dog. And she just admitted in the book that she shot and killed the dog down into a rock pile, shot the dog, killed the dog. And I think she also put down a goat or something like that. So this is sort of she's a South Dakota kind of gal, and you do that sort of thing. But the problem is you're not in South Dakota. You're on the national stage, you're on the national stage, and people don't want to hear about dogs being shot, right? So it sort of shows that she's sort of tone deaf to how people will perceive information that you're giving.
Do you think the point, because a lot of people were asking, why would she voluntarily put this in a book if it was going to look so bad? Why did her editor let her put this in the book? But do you think she originally put it in the book because it showed that she had gumption, or she was willing to do it? Like, why would she put this in a book? No, nobody went like, oh, you better put the dead dog thing in. She put it in there. So why would she do that?
I don't know what her motivation was, but I do know that knowing people that are farmers and cattlemen and stuff like that understand that we treat dogs differently than they treat dogs.
Yeah.
I was like, so the dog just lives outside? They're like, yeah, so dogs live. I'm like, but that doesn't seem, the dog doesn't come in the house. They see the dog as like a working dog, a tool. They, you know, and just part of it, and put the dog down and weren't able to do the work. So, but her just talking about how she shot the dog, everybody just completely freaked out. And then she decided, which was a big mistake. She goes on CBS to try to defend.
To further talk about shooting the dog, yeah.
Hey, yay, yay.
And the point of all this originally was she's writing this book because Trump is going to name a VP candidate soon. She wants to be at the top of that list, yeah. Right? And so she was like, all right, this is going to get me out there. People are going to be talking about me.
Right. She wants to show that she's tough, right? Like the same. So, for instance, in the book, she said that she had met with Kim Jong-un from North Korea.
That's tough.
And then she would, you know, this is the way I would, you know, look down on some little puny dictator. I wouldn't be bullied by him. So she put that in there. She also said she met with Macron. Well, then when she was asked about it, that's so easy to figure out that she'd never met with a North Korea leader.
You talk about meeting some world leaders and one specific one. Quote, I remember when I met with North Korean dictator Kim Jong-un. I'm sure he underestimated me, having no clue about my experience staring down little tyrants. Did you meet Kim Jong-un?
Well, you know, as soon as this was brought to my attention, I certainly...
I got to be brought to your attention. It's in the book. You wrote it.
Did he read your book? Did you tell him about the dog?
I made some changes and looked at this passage, and I've met with many, many world leaders. I've traveled around the world.
Yes.
As soon as it was brought to my attention, we went forward and have made some edits. So I'm glad that this book is being released in a couple of days and that those edits will be in place and that people will have the updated version.
So you did not meet with Kim Jong-un. That's what you're saying.
No, I've met with many, many world leaders, many world leaders. I've traveled around the world. I think I've talked extensively in this book about my time serving in Congress, my time as governor, before governor, some of the travels that I've had. I'm not going to talk about my specific meetings with world leaders. I'm just not going to do that. This anecdote shouldn't have been in the book. And as soon as it was brought to my attention, I made sure that that was adjusted. So the book is not released until Tuesday. And so we're doing all that we can to make sure that those changes are made. And I'm going to continue to focus on what this book is.
Well, why would she, again, like the dog story, how does this make it into the book and she doesn't know about it if she wrote the book?
Okay, let's give her the benefit of the doubt.
Oh, she made a mistake. All right, it happens.
No, let's say she tells somebody the story. Let's say she says, She could say, well, you know, if I were ever to meet Kim Jong-un, I would, you know, I wouldn't have any trouble looking down at that little puny dictator, right? So maybe she says, if I were. So then maybe the person takes it, I'm just guessing, just for the sake of, you know, whoever's writing the book for her, the guy then takes it. She said if she ever met, they'd drop the first part. If she met with, she would do this. Who knows, kind of a whisper down the lane thing. That's gotcha. All. I don't know. Because would you come flat out and just tell a complete, you know,
fabrication like right. that? I doubt it.
Well, you could end up, well, you could be
people
president.
People check these things.
You yeah. could be president of the United States. You could be Joe Biden graduating ahead of your class.
The Face the Nation host asked her, she says, well, you kind of claim that you didn't realize it was in there, yet there's video of you recording the audiobook That's version right. of this book, so oh, how no. is it possible that you recorded it in a studio and didn't know it was in there? And she basically filibustered and move on to something.
She goes, I've met many, many people. Yeah. I've met okay. a lot of them.
Shooting a dog.
There's been such an enormous backlash about your revelation that you shot and killed a wire hair pointer named Cricket, who was 14 months old. You say in the book she came from another family that struggled with her aggression. You'd been training her to hunt. She got too excited, ruined the hunt, and then attacked and killed some chickens. I wonder if you have regrets about sharing this story.
You know, Margaret, this book is filled with vulnerable, painful moments in my life, filled with times where I've made very difficult decisions. The reason that this story is in the book, because people need to understand who I am and some of those difficult decisions. This was a dangerous animal that was killing livestock and attacking people. And I had little children at the time. Our operation had many kids running around and people in interaction with the public. And I made a difficult choice. I think you're a mother, too, and you have little kiddos. Would you make a choice between your children or a dangerous animal? And I think I would ask everybody in the country to put themselves in that situation, because yeah. that's what I faced. And I talk about it because what I'm tired of in this country is politicians who pretend to be something that they're not. That they aren't willing to have the hard conversations and look at the past and the tough decisions that they've made. What I talk about in the book extensively, when people are able to get it on Tuesday, is to see the there whole story Sell and the truth, not the spin that the media has put on this story. And,
well,
and that's the decision
I described,
that I made.
I described, I think, accurately how you wrote it up in the book. You didn't say the dog attacked people. You said it had tried to bite you. And I just wonder why you concluded that a young dog was untrainable and not just take it to a shelter.
This dog was a working dog, and it had come from a family that already had issues with this dog. And I had put months and months of training into this dog. This dog had gone to other trainers as well. So all of that is the facts of the story, and all of that shows that when you put someone in a position where they have to make a decision and they want to protect their family and protect children and other people from getting attacked from an animal that has attacked others and killed livestock, that's the choice I made over 20 years ago.
Yeah,
and that I didn't ask somebody else to take that responsibility for me, that I had to make that decision myself.
Yeah, she's done.
She just keeps going on about the dog. Have you ever had to get rid of a dog? I have. I've had dogs that have killed. And we had to get rid of a dog when I was a kid.
Oh, yeah.
Because killed what?
Animals, okay, like not okay, people. Okay. I didn't kill people. That'd be weird.
Wow.
But we had this big dog, and we got him as a puppy.
Yep.
He had hunting dog breeding in him or something, and he got huge. He got massive. We didn't know what. He was like half golden retriever, half horse or something. Just a massive dog. And so he starts coming home with like neighbor's pets and things that he had killed. Hey. And so we decided, you know, like we didn't Christy Noman. We didn't take him out behind the barn and shoot him. But we did. My dad did go and take him to a farm somewhere where I think he's still living to this day. This is like 25 years ago.
Oh,
he's
the old live on a farm thing?
Yeah. Well, no, he actually did in this case. I think he went to a farm.
Sure he did.
No, but there's a humane way that you can treat these animals. I don't think my dad took him out just to the end of the pasture and took care of him. But he did take him to a loving family that had the ability to train him up and make sure that he was a good boy. And we used to get updates and stuff like that when we were little kids. But there's a way that you can handle these animals that isn't necessarily killing them. But she lives out in the middle of the farm country, and maybe nobody else wanted to take the dog.
Listen, it's a cultural thing, right? I remember we did a story in this woman that was when all of the sheep were being born, ewing season or whatever the term was for it.
Lambs.
They're being born. And one of them, I remember standing there with her, and she goes, oh, her name is Patty. And she goes, oh, that mom's ignoring that one. For whatever reason, the mom was ignoring this one particular lamb, wasn't letting the lamb in. So then they went over to a dead lamb, and right there she skinned the thing and took the fur off of that lamb and wrapped it around another lamb that was alive and put it over that and then shoved it underneath to get a nipple of the other for the mother.
And the mother accepted it this
time? Yeah. But like sitting there watching it, you're like, oh my God.
Was it dead? The other one was already dead though.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But just, you know, understanding like this, people do things. You're like, well, it's so horrible to watch. But, you know, you want to save the one. For some reason, that mom was rejecting the one, the one. So then she put the dead skin of the other one over the one that was being rejected and took it over to the mother who had the dead.
Is that where Silence of the Lambs got like its whole plot line from? Because that's
doesn't sound
eerily similar.
Like it.
Yeah,
it's basically the same movie. The man you're looking for is named Buffalo Bill. Yeah.
Do you think that she regrets putting the story in there? I mean, like politicians never seem to ever say she had ample opportunity to just say, hey, you know what? Like,
I would
you know,
not have put it in there. I don't think it shows
listen,
that she's
like,
necessarily
this is farm
strong.
Life. I shouldn't have put it in.
Or what you do is you say how horrible it was. I remember taking the dog down there and the dog looking at me and knowing this was the best thing for me and my family and his heart's in pain. Blah, blah, blah. But if you just say, oh, I took it down to the rock pile and shot it and, you know, I ended up shooting it twice. And then I think she shot a goat the same.
Yeah,
I mean,
nobody's talking about the goat. Isn't that funny? Nobody's talking about the goat. People are only talking about the dog because it's like a puppy. But she also killed a goat.
Yeah, where are the people outraged about the goat?
They're not. They don't care about goats. Well, I had goats. Goats are nasty. That's
okay, well, it just goes to show that she's tone deaf to the rest of the country on this sort of thing. She's done. She's done. They're not going to talk to her now. There's 11 other people that are possibly in the running for Donald Trump's VP position. He could elect one of these guys, the frat boys, right? These guys that University of North Carolina, there were three of them, and they saw that the American flag had been replaced by the Palestinian flag, so they marched down there.
I want to bring in the boys here in a second.
And they replaced the flag. They put American flag back up. That's after the president of University of North Carolina walked down there and said, absolutely not. Police surrounded the flagpole to protect as the kids went and put the other flag up, made sure the flag didn't touch the ground. They were being spit on, screamed at. Stuff was thrown
rocks,
at them.
Bottles.
Rocks, right, by a bunch of pro-Hamas terrorist supporters.
Zachary Sharinsky, Brendan Rosenblum, Trevor Land, the guys who are in that video. Brendan, we had you yesterday. Start with Zachary real quick. You guys just did what you thought was the right thing all of a sudden. Are you surprised by the result?
I'm not. First of all, thank you for having us. We're all happy to be here. When we saw our brothers there defending that flag, there was no doubt in any of our minds that we were going to go and join them. I'm glad that it was able to be put to an end the way that it did eventually. But yeah, we were there defending our brothers, and there wasn't going to be anything that was going to stop us from going to that flag.
All right, but Trevor, like, think about this, right? Okay, a couple days ago, you guys did the right thing. You weren't doing it for fame or for glory. You were doing it because you thought it was the right thing to do. You were there with your brothers who were taking a stand, and now
your brothers are the fraternity that they're in.
Yeah, all these
with John Rich, who's going to play you a concert with $400,000 worth of free beer. That's pretty cool.
So John Rich is going to perform. We're going to try to get him on the radio right before the concert. And the $400,000 worth of beer is what? They did a GoFundMe page.
They said, I think there's obviously no way that they thought they were going to make as much as they did. But they put a GoFundMe page up. They said, hey, wouldn't it be fun to like get a couple bucks for this? We could throw a party as a joke. But then everybody got really excited about it. Everybody loved seeing that these guys were defending the flag. It's just a very relatable thing. They finally ended up with $516,000 in donations.
Yep.
The biggest donations came from like three or four people, all donated 10 grand a piece. And then everybody else, there was like 15,000 individual donations plus of like $5-$10 a piece. And then what they decided to do is we're going to use a chunk of it for the party. And then the rest, they said they're going to donate to charity.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think that we can all agree that we didn't anticipate that part of it would occur, but we did know that it's important to stand strong in our beliefs and to be a representation of what we hope to see for Jewish students and for students who believe in our flag and democracy across the country.
Yeah, Brendan, tell me what's happened in the past 24 hours from the conversations you've had.
Yeah, I think first of all, we definitely got a lot more media attention. And for us, it's not about fame. It's not about coolness. It's about bringing attention to our message. Stand up for what you believe in.
don't let anyone tell you otherwise. For me, it's when your values are questioned, that's when it matters. It's easy to believe in something when no one else, when it's easy. But when people question that, that's when it's important to stand by them.
This is reminds me, so 68, Richard Nixon gets in there, and when he is speaking and LBJ decides that he's not going to run, Nixon gives a speech, a radio speech, about the silent majority, referring to Americans, not those on the hard, hard right, and not those on the hard, hard left, but the silent majority, the people that go to work every day, they, you know, go to church or synagogue, they pray, they believe in God, they pay their taxes, and they just, they're living their life. They're not out there screaming and yelling and protesting. And he says, you know, that so Nixon was able to sort of slide himself into the middle there, right in the middle. So Humphreys was on the far left over there, and Wallace was in there involved as well, to the right of Nixon. But Nixon sort of put himself in there like, I'm here for the silent majority, the people that you don't hear from, the forgotten man, the guy behind the tree, the person that is overlooked often. And so these guys do this act to put the American flag back in there, and the silent majority goes, yes, we support that. We don't want protesting. We don't want violent protesting. We don't want to support these students. Most of them, a lot of them aren't even students, that are taking over buildings. So they say, yes, we support what you're doing. The silent majority rises up and ends up writing checks for $400,000 or $500,000.
What's interesting about that, too, is, and I know we got to wrap this up, but like you think about all the press coverage that people have made over these campus protests for the last however many weeks they've been going on. Every single news station's covering this like round the clock. This story, though, one that a lot of people can just say,
the silent majority,
a lot of them who aren't loud about things, but obviously vote with their wallets, a lot of people get excited about. It doesn't even get covered on ABC and CBS. It's just one of those stories.
NBC gave it 8 seconds.
That's it. And beyond that, it's just like the internet, and that's all they needed.
I know. Well, we'll see what Mr. Rich is going to do a concert for them down there, Joe.
Yeah, I haven't seen when, but okay. He's on board, so they don't have to spend their money on entertainment.
Okay, yeah. Because, again, it's the same sort of thing that happened, you know, during all the George Floyd riots. People would see people getting their buildings and their businesses getting burned down, you know. And, you know, I saw this black entrepreneur that had this bar in Minneapolis, and he couldn't afford the insurance for the bar. So he canceled the insurance at the last minute. And then they went in and burned his bar, his sports bar, down that he had spent all this money on, his entire family, all of his savings on. And the news, I think I'd seen it somewhere, and I sent him some money because I thought, you know, here's this guy just trying to make ends meet, trying to run a business, happens just through some weird fluke, cancels the insurance because he couldn't afford it, and then he had nothing. And I think he ended up getting, I don't know how much money, to get back up on his, because people want to support the underdog that is fighting for real stuff, real facts. Not that, you know, Israel is colonialist, and not Israel is in there terrifying, and Israel is, you know, the problem. No, Hamas is the problem. And people understand real facts and will support real facts regarding what's really happening in the world. So when they see these guys put this American flag up, they're like, yeah, we'll support that.
It's this unifying thing. People get excited because they go, I recognize that. We can all vote for the flag.
Yeah, exactly.
I like it. It's easy.
Again, but why the news doesn't cover that? They cover the peaceful protests that are happening in other places because that's what they believe. I appreciate the pregnant pause just before that.
First day jitters.
You're so busy putting stuff up on the Instagram.
Yeah, you should check it out. A lot of fun stuff. Fun stuff.
That's the tease.
Bucky's Auto Service Centers. 16 locations, been around for 54 years. Take your car to Bucky's Auto Service Centers. Do-do-do. All right. It's gone. The Pacific Northwest historic tradition of octopus wrestling is gone.
Oh, man.
Don't they have a casino that could pick this up? Muckleshoot Casino or something? Octopus wrestling? They get people out of the crowd to go octopus wrestling? It's been going on for a long time. I think I covered it or hearing about it or something.
Sounds like an Evening Magazine.
Doesn't it
segment?
Though? Tonight on Evening Magazine, he's got two arms. His opponent?
Eight. Octopus. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Not a fair fight. Yeah.
I'd never heard of this. This is crazy.
Were you watching Evening Magazine?
Well, no, I mean, you know, it's been a couple of years, but basically, as I understand it, you just swim down, you find an octopus, you fight it, and you bring it back to the surface, right?
The largest octopuses in the world, or octopi in the world, are in the Pacific Northwest, right off the pier next to, right there near the aquarium, and there were a couple in there, but Yeah, I mean, I don't know how much wrestling you actually have to do or boxing with the thing. Do you just grab it and pull it up and it's come up? Does it wrap itself around you?
They can be really big, like 50 pounds something. But underwater, they're really powerful and they get their suction.
And I hear they're lighter underwater.
You're right. You're probably right. They'll just sink you right to the bottom with their immense weight. But yeah, then you bring it up to the surface. This was really popular back in the 50s and 60s, and they had these national championships. People would come from all around to fight our octopuses, whatever they call them.
There's fighting going on.
Well, they wrestle them, and they wrestle them. They're not like, yeah, they're not, there's nothing personal.
But if you go down with a tank, if you got scuba.
No. A lot of times it was free diving. So that was the risk. You might ask yourself, like, well, yeah, of course, if you can breathe, like an octopus can breathe, then it's like, whatever, it's not that challenging. But these people were holding their breath. These were free diving people.
Okay.
Eventually, they introduced tanks to it, and it became much less competitive because
the advantage going to the octopus.
Yeah. But once they when they were just going down mano a mano, and they couldn't breathe, and they were fighting these things trying to get them back to the surface, there's some real danger involved in that.
Anyone die?
Not that I know of. Okay. No, they did fine, and neither did the octopus.
Can you hear me?
Yeah. Are they coming back again?
No, this is just a retrospective. They're just thinking about it. They're just remembering it. But they would bring them to the surface. They would hold them up. They would weigh them.
Right.
People would get excited and they'd clap. And then they would, you know, they would toss them back into the water.
Oh,
and then
good.
The octopus could
wrestle
somebody else.
No harm, no foul. Okay, fine.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so it seems like a nice thing to do and kind of fun.
Was there a charity involved in it or just there's a day of, everything was popular in the 50s and 60s.
Yeah, it was crazy stuff in the 50s. But there was a local guy who had a bunch of dive shops and he was using this as kind of a way to promote his diving shops.
Yep.
And so this was an event that he created. And then it became...
You seemed really excited by it. No wonder you weren't ready to do the Cairo.
I was like in the world of octopus.
I said so.
I was all excited.
Well, I said to Joe, animals performing for people's enjoyment. And my dad took us to the Steel Pier in Atlantic City to watch the famous diving horses, which my dad went to when he was a kid. It started in 1928. And I remember thinking to myself, even as a kid, it was like, I don't think that horse dove.
He doesn't look like he's having fun.
They would blindfold the horse.
Oh, geez.
And they would tie its tail. I don't know why. It makes it more docile or something. And it was on a platform. It's like 40 feet up and had a gigantic swimming pool. And the horse is out on the platform, and then they would basically just drop the platform. So it wasn't like it was making a running start, yelling out, cannonball! And
no.
Then it was just like, bion!
They made a movie out of this in the early 90s called Wild Hearts Can't Be Broken. Did you guys ever see this? Or was this, I was the only one who had an older sister? No? So we watched this movie all the time.
Did you have to have an older sister to watch it?
Yeah, you did.
Okay.
It was a girl movie. It's about horses.
Okay.
So we watched this movie all the time. So I was aware. I guess I didn't realize this was a real thing. I just thought it was made up for the movie.
I go a long way for it.
Yeah, but this was and you actually saw it in person. That's fascinating.
Here's 1928.
Hey, this is a real horsed up picture.
This is Bob.
Oh, a date with a lady.
Oh.
Yeah,
it was always a lady. She had a blonde wig on or something like that. It was actually more dangerous for the riders than the horse. Yeah, one woman just detached retina. Another person jumped off and died.
What?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, so hold on.
The detached retina, that's what happened in the movie. It must have been based on something.
You must have told him to drop in sometime.
Oh. This is back in 1928 when they were getting paid by the word and they weren't paying him much, obviously.
Here would be as appropriate a spot as any to explain that professional stunt people earn pretty good livings. But why the hard way? Very many people probably ask that.
Yeah.
Q.
Very many people have asked me if I'm not afraid to ride the horses. And all I can say is that I would never ride them if I were. There's too many other things in the world to do.
What?
How right you are.
Why do they talk like that?
How right you are. Right.
Back then, why do they talk like that? That like Mae West
that
affectation
thing,
or something?
I don't know. That was the thing they were doing back then. Those are the ladies that are riding on top of the horses. My dad was like, let's go see that. That'd be good for you. So we went and watched that. And then we went over to the other part where a guy would stand there up on the boardwalk in Atlantic City. And he would say, I'm going to jump. I'm going to jump. I swear I'm going to jump. Just somebody give me some money. I'm going to jump. So everybody would like hit a little hat there, a box.
Oh, this isn't a joke. This is a real story.
No, real deal. And people would throw the money into this box.
It's a suicide. You're describing a suicide.
Well, this wasn't jumping into wasn't jumping onto a highway into a, you know, ongoing traffic.
So
he was going to jump off a big rail high up. Pretty high up, because you'd look over the edge of the rail, you're like, wow, that's quite a fall. And then my dad would throw a couple bucks in. Everybody would throw the money in to watch the guy climb up onto the rail and then throw himself off down into the sand.
I thought he was... I thought he was threatening to do it if you didn't pay him. Yeah. And I was like, how does
basically,
he keep this gig up?
He was basically saying, I will jump as soon as I get enough money. So then everyone's like, yeah, I'll pay
you
for that.
You were paying him to jump.
Wow.
Yeah.
I thought you were paying him not to jump.
No, originally. What kind of business is that?
No, I know. Like, I was like, the horse is doing
it.
That. Yeah, yeah.
No, it was people wanted to see him jump.
See, that's very different than now. If somebody got up on a bridge now and said, I'm going to jump, everyone would try to stop them.
No,
back then,
they'd all yell jump.
It was a harsher world back then.
It was entertainment. We didn't have our phones or anything else.
That horse lady's getting paid to do this. This guy's getting paid to do this.
We'd watch the person jump, watch the horse go, and then like further down the boardwalk, there'd be some guy standing there waiting for the crowd to gather around. And then he'd say, as soon as I get, you know, X amount of dollars, whatever it was, I'm going to jump. And then it'd be like, oh, throw the money in. Keep, oh, you got a nickel dime. Put a big box full of money. And then all of a sudden the guy would just throw himself off the top of this thing down onto the sand. It was quite the fall.
Would he take the money first or just leave the money up there?
As soon as he hit the sand, my dad goes, get the cash.
Yeah, get it back.
No.
He wasn't a very good business.
He had a friend standing there.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Was like, did they have like a bearded lady? Is it that kind of era of the
She wasn't jumping.
I don't know. The freak shows and stuff that come to town. But we didn't. I never went to that kind of thing.
Okay.
The bearded lady or the fat lady or the tiny guy or the lobster man or something like that. They would only come around once in a while.
Yeah,
but this guy's
twins.
A regular guy. Yeah. It's a regular guy standing there jumping off the thing into the sand. But it was weird, like, he could hurt himself.
Yeah.
But that's what made people want to give the money.
To see him hurt himself?
No, just to see him jump. Nobody wanted to see him get hurt.
Did you ever see Houdini?
What? So how old do you think I am?
Houdini?
I mean,
Houdini was like 1930s.
Oh, it was 1928. I mean, come on.
No, that's a long time ago. He was an amazing magician, though.
What?
He was very good at what he does.
How old? Really?
Gotcha.
Ever seen the Minotaur? It's all right, here we go. Teeny, get ready. Teeny. I know, you're sad, Teeny. I know.
This is a disaster.
There's a lot of text messages coming in. We'll try to read them all today. We'll get to them at 5:47, somewhere in there. Here's the deal. What happened? They've made changes here at Cairo for financial purposes. Sherry, no longer the co-host. Jake comes in. They got rid of the evening show, moved Jake over, don't have to pay him anymore, save some money.
Wait a minute.
Oh, you didn't hear that part of it? You can leave.
That's not why I'm here, because I'm cheaper. Is that right? Oh, boy. It's depressing. Let's move on. It's embarrassing.
Did you get the new cell phone that they have here at Cairo? They gave everybody cell phones. Did you get one?
Are you talking about the tiny one that the guy in India swallowed?
By the way, it wasn't even that tiny. I looked it up. This guy was a prisoner. He's in this prison in India, and they are going to, I guess there's riots or something, so he wants to hide the cell phone, because he's got a cell phone.
Yeah.
And he figures, well, I don't know where to put it.
Puts it under his pillow or something?
Well, maybe he was going to put it somewhere else, but then maybe he had something else in that spot. So he decided the best thing to do would be swallow it.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know how he goes ahead and swallowing an entire cell phone, but he does. He swallows the whole thing, and for about 20 days, he's okay, because he figures, well, I'll just kind of have it in there, and maybe it'll
pop out at some point.
Later on, it'll make its way out. It didn't. It blocked the top part of his intestine, so they rushed him to the hospital. It took about 45 minutes of surgery, and they removed the cell phone, and then they asked him about it. He's like, oh, that's what the heck?
Did he act surprised? He's like, what is that in there?
Boy,
if I had a nickel for every time I lost
it. While you're in there, find the charger.
Did you find a charger? They call that keystring. But it's the opposite. Did you know that? Like when somebody...
Yes, I know that. Yes. Joe's giving me lots of advice on all that sort of stuff. Yeah.
Oh, when somebody's trying to sneak something into jail.
Yeah.
They don't usually go through the mouth. And so
it's
in this case...
referred to as the butt wallet.
Oh, okay.
The butt wallet, yes. Anyway, so in this case, he panicked. But let's give him credit for swallowing an entire cell phone. It wasn't a great big one.
It wasn't like an iPhone
15 a tiny one. It wasn't like a Cricket. It wasn't the Cricket one. A little tiny one.
There's no cell phone that I can picture in my mind that would be swallowable.
No.
If you were in jail, and I know you've been there a couple times, and you know that if all of a sudden, if they find this contraband there, that they're going to really do something terrible to you, you're thinking like, is there some way? Because get it into your down into your throat. Ugh. Yikes. But the good news is, they found the cell phone. He doesn't have an obstructed colon anymore, but I'm sure they're going to do horrible things to him because he was, you know,
the pathways are,
had taken the cell phone. there.
I wonder if he got any calls or text messages within that 20-day span.
Probably. And that's what I would have been scared about, that battery, because all the acid in your stomach could have, like, eaten it through the battery and could have broken into the...
I think at this point, you're pretty much way out over not having to worry about battery acid building up or missing phone calls.
I don't know. Indigestion's very uncomfortable. I think he probably would have been pretty worried. I mean, I would have been pretty worried about that if I had a cell phone in my stomach.
I swallowed a bullet a couple of months ago. You know that. Remember that?
No.
I used to carry around these little 22s in my pocket all the time, just little ones. And I used to carry around vitamins as well. So I had the vitamins, vitamin D, and I had the fish beta cap, the fish oil capsule, which is the exact same size as the 22. And I used to have all the vitamins. I'd pop them all in my mouth.
They feel very different, though. Fish vitamins, it's like a squishy, right?
Yeah, but I had a whole bunch. I would like pop a whole bunch of them in my mouth at one time. Vitamin D, vitamin C, the fish capsules, everything else. And then I was like, I threw one in, and as I was choking them all down, I felt one kind of scratch a little bit. And I was like, Ooh. Oh, my God.
Oh, my gosh. What did you do? Did you have to go in or you did just nature took its course? Extra cup of coffee.
Did you ever
good
see
to
it
go.
Again?
I never looked back.
Never looked back.
Yeah.
Did you ever find it?
I wasn't digging around for it. I had plenty of others.
Well, yeah. I mean, but you don't...
They're only like this big.
But it's like, it's stuck in your... It could be stuck in your system.
No. No.
Probably went through. You're probably fine.
It's perfectly shaped to make the trip.
Right. It wasn't some gigantic... It wasn't like a, you know, a shotgun shell or something like that. Uh-oh. It's flying out as a bullet. Oh, no.